Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, it's been a while. We have a lot to cover.
That's right. We got some catch up. So, yes. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Good. There's no way we're going to cover everything that's happened over the past few weeks.
No.
But we're going to try. We'll dig into it. I've got a few things to talk about today. A new game that we're doing here. I talked about Friday Fives. Then now it's a new version of it. Yeah, the team is growing. A security issue I can talk through. Some lessons learned on some painful mistakes we've made over the past few months in the way we're designing our sprints and generally managing engineering. Yeah, and then talk about things we're doing on the product side. And yeah, I got a bunch of stuff. How about you?
Good stuff. I've got some travel coming up in the next few weeks. And through that travel or around it, I've got a one-week productized launch coming up, some tweaks to that. I had a tweet go viral last week, which was really weird. So I did start sending out invites to the first users on Process Kit. That's been interesting. And I've had calls all the time with people on the early access list, but now I've had calls with people who started using the product, which has been interesting. And I'm probably today, after this call, I'm going to push live the Stripe billing system. So I could finally start to hopefully get those first paying customers. We'll see about that.
Make that money.
And then the last thing that I have here is the marketing site design for Process Kit. I talked about it a bit. I'm trying to figure out the next steps on that. I've changed some plans on that. We could talk about that. So in the next couple of days and weeks, I feel that kind of an exciting kind of pressure that I like having these trips coming up. I love that because it's like, I always love to travel and go places, and I love the deadline, the hard stop that it gives
you
me.
You do like the deadlines.
I love it. I like, especially these trip deadlines, because it's like, so next week I'm going to LA for two nights to speak at WP Elevation conference, which I'm excited about. Then the following week, I'm home for a week, and then my family and I go on a three-week vacation through Europe. I mean, one of the big things that was to get this Stripe billing thing built and shipped now before I go on these trips, so that at least I can get that first customer stuff going.
Yes. And something like that, that's 3 weeks. Are you unplugging for 3 weeks, or are you just doing like an hour or hour to a day here and there as necessary?
I'm not going to unplug. I have a MacBook Air that I'll bring with me. You know, I'm not going to do a lot of work, probably. We have Airbnbs at every place, and it's 3 weeks, so it's not like we're going to be running around all day every day. There's going to be downtime.
Yeah, that's the best.
And we'll be on trains and stuff for a bunch of hours, so we'll see what I get done. It's mostly just checking in and doing little things. Hopefully not too many calls, but yeah, that's
cool.
It.
Very nice. I just did some travel of my own the past few weekends, which is why we haven't had an episode come out in a while. I had two weddings on the East Coast back to back, one in Rhode Island in Newport, another one in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, both trips without the kids, which was very strange, but a great time, and now feeling energized and back here and, of course, heading to Slovenia next week. But that's all good.
Cool, man.
Cool, man. So let's jump in.
Yeah, what was your first thing?
Yeah, well, something nice and light to start things off. We have these games that we try to do to get to know each other better, but especially between the Portland and the Slovenia teams, kind of keep bringing people closer together and just to generally just get to know your colleagues at a different level. So one of our sports specialists, Shauna, is like, she's very creative and very social. So she comes up with these games. So the first game we did was Friday Fives, where one person from each team, Portland and Slovenia, would list out like five facts that you probably wouldn't know about yourself. So that was fun. And we went through everybody. So now we came up with a new game where it's list out five songs from your past and basically describe why you want to share these five songs with us, your team, what the context is, what the meaning of the songs are. So we just did that today for the first time. It was myself and Rock, the CTO over there. And it's a trip. What it does, it brings you down memory lane. You can't help but start looking at these different sections or phases of your life and like the songs that defined those phases. Then you go to Spotify, you start listening to them. And it's literally the first note two notes, three notes of a song, you are transported back to that era, those feelings, that mindset, who you were then, the people around you. It's a trip. You know, it has a big impact on the people searching for the songs and explaining why they're important. And then we hope that it has a similar effect on the people reading it and listening to the songs in a way that helps you get to know someone at a deeper level beyond just being a colleague. And then, of course, like, we're playing the music in the different offices and creating one giant Spotify playlist for everybody.
That's really cool. We should do something like that. We've always had our Friday question thing where somebody asks a random question, like your favorite vacation, your favorite book, whatever it is.
And everyone answers?
Yeah, everyone goes through it. That's cool. We started doing like Friday photos, you know, which are just share anything.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're 24 people now, which... It's always this comical thing when we're like, how many are we? And no one has any idea. Everyone's like, 21, 22. But we hired two new, both women. It's also a pretty interesting experience that we should talk about at some point. As we're getting to, like, you know, this number is 24 people, the diversity thing really starts to weigh on you, like, in a good way. You're really trying to be more conscious so you don't end up with 30 white dudes. Right. You know, that's kind of a... Yeah,
so it's a thing in this industry, for sure.
It's a thing. It's a thing. Yeah. And Portland doesn't really help in terms of the diversity just in people here in general. So we have two women joining, one in customer success and one in – it's content, but it's really like communications. So everything from positioning to copy to actually content itself to announcements, all that. So that's very exciting. More offense, basically.
Awesome. Love it.
Yeah. How about you?
So last week I put out this tweet that it was like one of those like just off the cuff, like it was just a random thought that I had.
Like what Twitter is for.
Exactly. I said, the web developer's worst nightmare is when a family member or a friend calls you up and asks you to do their website or if you could help with their website. And I mean, as of today, it's got like 3,600 likes, like 600 retweets. My feed is insane with people like replying to me and sharing all these stories of their friends and family, like driving them crazy as clients and, you know, all this stuff. And if I guess if you've been a freelance web designer like I have, that you know what I'm talking about. Like, you've had that call. And so anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I've never seen anything on Twitter go crazy like that and so unexpectedly, you know.
I saw it happening, and it's kind of a trip. I assume it gave you like a taste of what it would feel like to, you know, to have a large following. I've read those tweets from people who are like, it's a bit addicting to put something out and get 1,000 likes. Like, you kind of get addicted to that specific type of attention.
I'll be honest, I don't love it, to be honest. And
yeah,
and
it's creepy.
Well, no, let me explain, because like I've been using Twitter. If you follow me for the past couple of weeks, I have been more active intentionally. I've been putting out more tweets of just trying to be helpful and educational, really like very mini 280 character blog posts, essentially. And they've been doing better. Like a lot of these over the past month or two, I'll get like 100, 200 likes, things like that.
And you don't like it?
No, those I like, because it's mostly people like in our realm, right? And this one was more of like a joke, like, isn't it funny or annoying when that happens? And I put it out there and it got like the 100 likes or so within a few hours. And then a few people retweeted it and it just went to that other level where it's just like it starts making the rounds and it goes crazy. It's not like I hate this sort of thing, but the thing that's sort of like annoying about it to me is like, for this particular one, you get a lot of replies to it. Like, people are sharing all these things with me now that it's at a point where you just have to ignore them all. You can't reply or acknowledge any of them.
So it puts you in that position.
Yeah. And I'm constantly interacting now with people that we know, like our friends and our circles, about other stuff, other tweets that I do interact with all the time. And now it's just like my feed is like filled up with this thing, you know. Anyway, it's just an interesting thing that happens on Twitter, like when these things happen in public. Because it's, you know, when I reply to other people's tweets, I usually only reply when it's somebody that I like actually know. and we're having like a meaningful conversation. Maybe like you chime in or somebody else chimes in and we're having this like
actual conversation,
like a bootstrapper kind of group public conversation, right? I love those things. Yeah. Then these other things, it's just like, okay, it was one thought that I had like 3 weeks ago. I kind of don't want to talk about that anymore.
Yeah. That's interesting. You kind of lose control of it once it gets published. Yep. Cool. So the next thing I want to talk about, I need to talk about a bit cryptically because we're in the middle of it right now, but it's a very new and interesting experience. So I just figured I'd share it. So yesterday we get an email from someone who is like a security expert, and it outlines a security vulnerability that they found in our system and effectively said that they were going to write a blog post about it and notify like all of the interested parties. So that was unexpected, unwelcome, right? It gets complicated immediately because you don't want to hear it, but you do want to know. So you can't be mad at the person who's letting you know because they're also doing you a favor at the same time. And it's almost like they're kind of doing their job and they're doing the right thing. So it immediately gets very complicated. And all of a sudden internally, it triggers these conversations of, okay, how did this happen? How do we fix it? What's the right reaction? How public do we need to be in the reaction? Should we let everybody know, or just the people affected, or the merchant, or the shopper, or everybody? Or, you know, how bad is this on a scale of 1 to 10? Is it a 3? Is it an 8? Is it a 10? Is it like total disaster? Like what? So all these questions came up.
So real quick, I'm curious about how this thing initiated. Like, so this person sent you an email. Mm-hmm. They said there's this security vulnerability, and did they say that they're going ahead and they're going to go public with this now, or did they try to help you resolve it like behind the scenes before going public about it?
It was professionally done. It wasn't unprofessional or threatening or anything like that. It was professionally done and also straightforward. And yes, I'm writing about this. If you want to comment, feel free to chime in and comment. I'm also letting X, Y, and Z parties know about it. So it was kind of like a straightforward, you know, this is what I'm doing. This is what's happening. Like, I'm not looking for like a bribe or something weird like that. Because we've had that before. Not bribe. Bribe's a bad word. A bounty, I think, is the proper terminology.
Yeah, I've seen that happen.
And we've had that, and we've offered to pay. And at least one person a few months ago, when we offered to pay, he said, I'm not interested in the bounty, but I have this charity that I like to donate to. So we donated there. So things like that have come up in the past. And overall, this isn't like a giant screw up. Like, we're not exposing payment data or anything super dangerous like that. But it's data that shouldn't be public that got indexed by Google. Right? Like order information, things like that, where it's like, it's kind of bad, but it's not horribly bad. It is a new experience for us, and it's forcing us to basically create a new process. Okay, how do we handle something like this? Who do we contact? Who's responsible for writing that email? Should that email come from me? Should it come from Ryan? Should it come from Rock? So all these new questions, it's kind of forcing us to lay down some new tracks to be able to go over next time it happens, because chances are it will happen again in the future.
Obviously, it's good that this thing comes up, that you find out about it and that they reached out to you. I would hope that if they're like a security firm or whatever, and they're trying, and this is what they do as their business, I would hope that they would help you resolve it first and then write about it, make a case study out of it, look how we helped.
Yes.
Rather than like go out there and do that, like whether you get back to them or not or something.
Yes. And that is what we're hoping. But there's something to hope that, right, the definition of hope is that it's not certain. You are hoping. And the interesting part about this scenario is you don't have control. And so when put in that position and you don't have control, what should you do? Right. So it forces us to think through, well, maybe we should hurry up and let the affected merchants know proactively so they find out from us and not from them. So all these things are it's
the other thing, you know, in your position, I mean, you have a tech team, but you're not really technical. So I wonder if there's that dynamic of somebody brings this to you. How serious is it? I mean, it sounds like it's important. You need to address it. But is it like the roof's on fire? This needs to be resolved now? Or is it like more of like an acceptable common thing that happens with a lot of software companies? Like
a lot of questions.
And then you have your team who they're interacting with you and you're their boss. So no matter what level of urgency this thing is, your team doesn't want to act like they don't care about this sort of thing. Like,
and I don't want to act like I don't care, even though I do not want to. I want to focus on other things, but it's now on my plate.
Yeah, like I wonder if that's like one of these things where you can like go to an outside technical advisor to be like, we just got this thing. Like, how serious is this? You know,
that was our instinct. Also, we have a CIO coach from a well-established tech company that we all would recognize the name of, and he's working with Jan, who is like in that area right now, working toward that goal, that role. And so that was our first instinct also. It's like, oh, well, let's get in touch with them and see, you know, how would they deal with it? How have they dealt with it in the past? Hopefully what happens is we react properly enough that it also inspires confidence in our merchants and also inspires the person who originally found it to include our reaction in the blog post, ideally in a favorable light. But again, we don't have control over it. We can kind of just do our best and hope that they write about it properly. And for our side, we just need to be prepared with communication. A lot of, if that happens, then we do this.
Right, right.
Yep.
Very cool.
So how about you catch us up a little bit on...
So with Process Kit, obviously that's the thing that I'm most focused on day to day for the foreseeable future here. And I don't remember exactly where we left off in the last episode, but basically what's been happening over the last few weeks is I did send a very small batch of first invites. I did that over, I think, 2 weeks. I think I sent about a total now of about 50 invites. The list as a whole is still like 1,600 or something like that. And I've been holding off on sending the bulk of them, because I really want to take it slow for these very early ones. The first batch I sent out, and I got some immediate quick feedback, and it kind of became apparent that like Zapier integration needs to rise to the very top of my priority list. So I built that. This was 2 or 3 weeks ago now. So built and shipped the Zapier integration, which is really awesome. Like, it's two-way. You could send Zaps to ProcessKit. ProcessKit can send Zaps out. It's pretty awesome. And then there's also some automation inside ProcessKit that can play off of the Zapier. Like, you could literally have like somebody fills out a form on your website, and that automatically fires up a project, automatically applies your processes, automatically assigns the people. Like, all that is in there today. So stuff like that is pretty cool. Once that was built and shipped, I invited another, like a second small batch, like another 25 people. And so now I've begun having calls with actual users. In the past, I've been doing weekly calls with just early access people who are waiting for their invites, kind of talking theoretically about how they would use Process Kit. Now I can actually go in and see, out of the people that I invited and out of the people who've created accounts, I mean, I must have invited more than 50 at this point, because there's about 50 accounts in there. So I go in there and I'm looking for the accounts that are more active than others, like the ones who've logged in multiple times, and I could see their accounts. So I'll see like who's actually started creating processes and things like that. And I'm inviting those people to calls, and I've had maybe 3 or 4 calls and then a few other conversations over email. So I have not started charging anybody yet. But when I send them the invite, I tell them this is what the pricing is going to be, and you're starting off on a free trial. Probably sometime in June is when that trial will end. Like, they're not expecting to use it for free forever.
Right. They have credit card on file.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, that's what you did recently.
Yeah. So recently I did build the Stripe billing. That will be pushing live later today, probably starting to charge in the next week or two. This week and last week, I've had a few calls with people who started using it, and about 3 people have like verbally said like, yeah, I plan on converting to a paying customer on this. I could see it, I'm going to be
after using it.
Yeah, after using it.
Okay. So how has the feedback been from real users compared
It's like taking that with a grain of salt. Like, whatever they say, like, you know, I just downloaded the mom test. I can't wait to read that. If you've heard about that, it's about like customer research and not trusting what they actually say and stuff like that. So I'm having a hard time getting a real honest sense on how good or worried I should be. I think things are going fine. So I have a bunch of users in there. I could see that about half of the people who've created accounts have actively started putting content into Process Kit, like creating processes, running projects. A few people have started inviting teammates. When I talk to them on the calls, I ask, like, are you actively using this in like live work right now with your team? And half and half, yes and no. Some are just still kicking it around. Other people, like, I send them the invite and then they'll email and say, like, I've just been busy. I'm going to get around to it maybe next week. I'm traveling. Like, I'm seeing people say, like, it just seems like a lot of work to get my stuff all set up and migrated. And I expected that would be a big hurdle. I think it's going to be a big hurdle. The other thing that I'm a little bit worried about is, you know, the fact that a lot of these people are from my audience. I know that I've had a lot of calls, pre-invites with people with larger teams, and they definitely see the value and are ready to get in there and use it. It just seems like some of these first users, not all of them, but some of them are smaller. Like they have one or two, maybe three people on their team, and some of them are like contractors. And so like they might even end up being paying customers, but they're not, maybe not the ideal use case for this.
Yes.
So
can I ask you generally what your expectations are for this first phase, this first month, 2 months, 3 months?
At the beginning of the year around January, I wrote in my journal, like, I would hope to have the product built, launched, and starting to get those very first paying customers in the month of June. And it looks like I am on schedule for that. I mean, that is if anybody actually pays for it. Anyway, just to catch us up, like, I talked about the Zapier thing. I talked about inviting the first users. This past week up until today, I've been building the Stripe billing system. So that now I'm going to push this live right after this call. So now I'll have the ability to like officially start people's trial periods. And then it'll, at the end of the trial period, it'll cut off their access and they have to enter a credit card and get on the plan.
So that billing functionality, at least this, like these early basic components, you built yourself, and did you build on top of Stripe?
Yeah, it's all Stripe. I could talk about that a bit because this is one of those things that
people, so tricky.
Yeah, but you know, bootstrappers and startup people are going to listen to this and be like, "Oh, why'd you build all that stuff? It's too early to spend time on that stuff." You hear people talk about like, "Oh, you know, for my first MVP version, I charged people manually and I did their renewals manually and all that." And I get that, but I feel like this is one of those things where you're going to need to build this stuff at some point anyway. And I could have done the most basic thing, which is just have the ability for people to enter their credit card and not do the free trial system, do that manually, and not do the per user pricing. I built all that so that as you invite a user, it adds quantity. As you remove a person, it decreases. It's a little bit more complicated because we have like a base plan that includes three users. And then after that, it's per user. So all that is now set up. My thinking on that was, look, I'm going to need all that stuff anyway. So I might as well build that from start to finish so that I can build it, ship it, and then move on to more important features that customers need. If you just do the bare minimum on something like that, you know that a few months in, I'm going to have to get the billing stuff in place. And then that's going to just put a whole wrench in any kind of roadmap progress that I have on the product side. So let me just get the billing stuff at least squared away now. So I spent the past like week and a half getting, it took me longer. I thought it would take a few days. It took about a week and a half to get Stripe all built out the way that I needed.
It does end up being more work than you expect, right? Stripe is amazing. It's amazingly simple to create charges and subscriptions. The second you throw in a layer of intentional strategy on your specific pricing and your specific product, it becomes more complex. And a lot of people go toward solutions like Chargebee that I'll say they're pretty good and they are very helpful, but very much the same way that, you know, our software, Carthook, helps marketers compromise less on their strategies. There's something about pricing and pricing strategy that there's a ton of compromise being made for the actual systems. Like we've probably had literally 8 or 10 meetings on pricing, and in every meeting, it is an element of, well, where does engineering need to come into play? Well, what changes need to be made? How long is that going to take? What can we put into the sprint? And there's a lot of compromise made on strategy to accommodate for the difficulty in pricing and billing.
I mean, Stripe compared to other integrations, other APIs, Stripe is brilliant. I mean, it's a dream to work with that API for sure, especially someone like me. I'm still pretty new to this stuff. You know, the reason why I didn't go with like a Chargebee or like, you know, at the very beginning going with something like Bullet Train to have all this stuff like built in from the start. I don't like that kind of stuff because it's with like a Chargebee, like you still need to go through and integrate my user invite system with their per user billing stuff. And then I got to figure out how to integrate that. It's like, I might as well spend that time integrating directly with Stripe. It doesn't seem like it's an actual time saver for me. And, you know, and then I've got my own free trial system. And I was talking to Chris Oliver, who runs GoRails, about this today, actually. I was like, it's kind of amazing that there aren't that many tutorials or guides out there for setting up a SaaS Stripe billing system, especially one that's doing per user pricing, because per user pricing actually seems pretty common these days.
You would think so.
But I ended up sort of mapping out that logic myself and then hooking into Stripe's API. And anyway, I mean, it took about a week and that's all built. So I'm just happy that like I could push that live and I wrote tests for it and everything. So that's good to go. Because now I can move on to writing like the automation rules feature and the other stuff that people have been asking for.
Yeah, you can gallivant through the beer gardens of Europe without too much guilt now that you have that done.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I'm pushing it live today. I'll probably announce it on Monday, and then it'll be probably a week or 10 days or so for people's free trials to run out, and then we'll see who upgrades.
There you go. Good. So next time we record, it'll be more like, this is the number of people that converted. Here are the people who I think are actually good customers that converted compared to just converted. We're getting closer to the sun now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Cool. So I have two related things to talk about. One is a mistake, and the second is the good things that are coming out of the mistakes. So over the past few months, we took on a really big project to overhaul our analytics. Really complicated. Our product is a bit of a beast these days, and we're processing a ton of money and there's a lot of data happening. And people want good analytics to understand what's happening with their accounts and their performance and their conversion rates and their upsells. And it all needs to be super fast. It needs to be accurate. And it wasn't. It wasn't good. We were relying on a third-party solution called Periscope that helped us do querying in a much faster way. But it really hampered our control over the presentation layer on what we want to show our merchants. And we know what we want to show our merchants better than Periscope allows. So we decided to overhaul it. That project lingered and it took a lot longer than expected. And at the very end of the process, when we went to release it, that's when a lot of these issues started to become exposed. Oh, we should have made this decision differently back then. Why didn't we contact this expert on TopTal that we use for this type of thing? Why are we contacting them now before we release it and not at the very beginning to help us with the architecture? Why did we assume that our engineers could go a long time without very, very much closer guidance from people who were more experienced? We learned a lot about the mistakes we had made, and we did a lot of retrospective and kind of tried to make it better. So we got it out. We released it. There's still some work to do on it, but it hurt. I became pretty upset. Because I was generally disappointed in our performance, mine included. It shook us up a little bit from our slumber of, oh, we need to be more proactively managing this process and the people. Not because they're not good engineers, but because it's our responsibility to have these rails up to understand when things are veering off course and to help as that happens, as opposed to letting it go on for too long and then at the end finding things out. Mm-hmm. So everyone learned like, something.
And sounds like it's more of a communication thing.
Communication and management and focus. So at the beginning of the year, we changed our corporate structure in Slovenia to create a wholly owned subsidiary and start to fully employ people as Slovenian employees to a Slovenian company as opposed to contractors for an American company. Because now that it's starting to get to kind of too many people, you don't want to mess around with the tax authorities there. So we're doing the right things there. That took a lot of attention from the management over there, right? Rock and Jan specifically. And that bit is in the butt. That hurt. There's also one of the biggest problems, at least from my point of view, is that we did a lot of work internally that made things better, but we didn't give enough new stuff. New features, new integrations, new things for prospects and customers to be happy with and start to use. We had too long of a gap in time, and that coincided directly with a reduction in the growth rate of the revenue. And we kind of don't want to make those mistakes again. So as part of the retrospective, as part of rethinking how we do this, one of the conclusions we came to is that we need to start opening things up to allow other people to build on top of our platform as opposed to expecting everything to be built by us. If you think about Shopify, you think about their trajectory, sounds pretty similar, right? It's, build an e-commerce platform. And then when does it really take off? When they open up an app ecosystem and development accelerates dramatically because there are other people who are economically incentivized to build stuff on your platform as opposed to everything going at the rate at which you can develop new things. So that's been our focus. And we've identified our what we call blockers, the things that make people leave and the things that make people say no in a sales conversation. And we are prioritizing those blockers as we open up an app store. As part of this transition that I've talked about in the past that we're undergoing from product to platform, we are now opening up what feels very much like a completely new product. And so thinking through that without that much expertise in-house on doing that has been a challenge. And we've kind of been grasping and looking for people who have that type of experience. We need to invest a lot more in DevOps, and we're hiring for that.
Like, are there going to be apps from Carthook in the App Store? Or will it only be third party?
A lot of these things are questions that we're coming up with for the first time. And we're already just in these very early phases being challenged with, do we want to build that? Do we want someone else to build that? Are we okay with someone else building that? So all of these questions around what is core to our service and what is not core. And it really feels like the things that are not core, we just need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable with people doing things that we maybe didn't think of or don't approve of. Or so we need to come up with these guidelines. We need to come up with the legal side of things. We're trying to do ourselves a favor by not biting off more than we can chew. So it will not be a public app store for months. It is by invite, by relationship, working directly with these app partners, and we're looking at one use case at a time.
Yeah, and that sounds smart. I mean, whenever the time comes to go public with this thing, you want to already have a library of solid apps in there,
right? And a process, multiple processes internally on how do we communicate, how does someone get what they need? We need to train support up, or right, get much more technical support for that side of things. It's almost like developer support and developer relations and developer communication. We might turn into a developer blog, and it really feels like it's going to be a big change. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, but you can look to the WordPress space. You know, like Easy Digital Downloads. Pippin's whole ecosystem there is on that model, and then I think NinjaForms also has their own app store, and they I don't know the whole story on these things, but I've heard of that tension between a third party putting out a certain thing and then the parent company sort of just either buying it out from them or taking it over, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes. So all those things that ourselves and the Shopify ecosystem overall has a pretty easy time throwing judgment toward Shopify and what they're doing, we are now about to experience all of that ourselves And I think we'll soften our judgmentalism as we experience these things.
Yeah, and then there's a whole customer support element to it too. It's like Joe Schmo puts up an app in your app store and Joe doesn't want to offer the customer support. They're going to go to Carthook for that. Do you guys need to support somebody else's code and that sort of question?
Well, that's why those things seem like they're currently avoidable. And that's part of why you don't go public right away. You go one use case at a time. You build relationships with each individual app developer. Then you do the co-marketing. It's almost, it's integrations on steroids. So whereas we used to do, let's say, one or two integrations per month, now what we're looking at is releasing 8 apps for one specific use case all in the month of June. And then another 8 in July and another 8 in August. So we really have to change a lot of our processes and a lot of the way we look at things.
I also like the idea of just apps in general from the product standpoint, because you could take certain features out as, and those are like apps modules that, like, if 80% of the customer base doesn't need this thing, it doesn't need to be a feature in the app. It could just in the core app, it could be an extra downloadable thing that if they need it, they get it, you know?
Yes. It felt like there was so much pressure on these features, on every nook and cranny of feature you could possibly think of, as you'd expect. And then this stress around these mistakes of the past sprint, it really like broke the dam. We were like, okay, why are we saying no to a feature that's relatively simple that people have been asking for 18 months and it's nowhere near our roadmap? It is not even close to the priority when an engineer could do it in 3 hours. But it's just not, we're not touching it. It's not coming close. All it is a distraction. So we can have someone work on it over the weekend and then screw up our QA process, or we can just say, hey, you want to make a few bucks? Build an app and people will use it. We know there's demand for it.
Yeah, very cool.
Yep. So that'll be new. I'm sure I'll talk plenty about that over the next year.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Yeah, I just had one more thing here. I think I touched on this last episode talking about the marketing site for ProcessKit. You know, now that I'm sort of crossing over that line from pre-launch into first invites into like a public launch sort of thing. I mean, there's not going to be some big splashy event of a public launch, but it's over this summer, over the next couple of months is when I want to make that transition. And I do feel some pressure to get a more legit marketing website built and launched out there, because I think that the current site is fine. It still gets new people signing up to the early access list every day. I wrote it's like a manifesto, kind of one pager. And now it has a video that I put on there to actually show people what the thing looks like. But I wrote that thing months ago, and it doesn't totally reflect the learnings that I've heard from people in the calls. And I need a thing that says, like, look, this is a product now. Here's what it can do. Here's who it's for. This is the pricing. I want to get that message across to new people who are discovering it today, and then get their reactions off of that. And have that be the basis for any new customer development, customer learning, and not have the current pre-launch thing. So I talked about how I was going to hire a designer this time around and a copywriter. Well, what I did so far was, and I published a YouTube video about this last week. My first step was to just start looking for designers. I looked on Dribbble and I picked out, made a list of like 10 people who have good work. And I spoke to about 6 of them. Got quotes from them, and I got close to sort of making a decision on someone to work with on this thing. But in the process, I started designing the wireframes. So I'm a designer. I have a pretty clear sense of what I want this page to include, the messaging, the positioning. And so I wanted that to be the basis for working with a designer. Like, this is intended to be a collaborative thing. So I started designing it. I wrote my draft copy in the wireframe like I usually do, and it's still very rough. But as I started kind of evaluating the designer's work before I hired them, just looking at their work and talking to them, it just didn't feel right to me about, like, I just felt like it wouldn't be the most efficient way to get this thing built, considering I have a pretty clear idea on what the design should be, and the fact that it's going to change so many times over the next few months because the product is so young that what I probably need to do is keep the design even simpler than what I've started wireframing. Different from what we have now, like the pre-launch thing, but simpler. And I'll design it, but just keep it very, very basic so that I could adapt it as I learn new things, or as I adjust the pricing, or as new features come into play, like, or a new learning about the customer and I need to adjust the marketing site in some way. Like,
you want that control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So I did do the draft copy on the site, and I am going to be working with Liana Patch, a copywriter. And so she's going to go through and basically go over my draft copy and make it more interesting, funnier, you know, more resonating with the target customer. And
cool. So, I love her stuff.
Yeah. She's great. I'm just excited to get her take on it, because I've always felt decent when it comes to copywriting, but because I know the customers well at this point, my stuff, I feel like always ends up being a little bit dry and serious and it needs to cut through, you know, and we're in a sort of competitive space. I want it to really be like different. So, you know, hopefully that can help.
Yeah. I think you're making the right investments to get control over it yourself. And then also layer in that professional copywriters are worth a lot for the conversion, as well as the positioning, as well as it's all part of the whole message.
Yeah. I mean, you know, given my upcoming travel, I'll probably need to push the site back by a few weeks or months. I really won't get into it until, like, I created the wireframe already, but I won't really touch it again probably until July. That's okay. I've got a long invite list to work through over the next few weeks, especially now that Stripe integration is in. So
good work, man. You'll be out in the market charging people in June.
Yeah.
You'd be the first engineer to ever ship on time. Congratulations.
Yeah. And and I guess one other quick thing I just wanted to mention real quick today, I meant to mention at the start, is I am doing a productized launch, a one-week launch, Friday, June 7th, which I think when this comes out, that'll be tomorrow. And it'll probably be the only opening of productized until the fall. And one thing that I'm doing differently is I think it'll be July 11th. I'm going to do a live Q&A session, like a webinar, but just taking questions and kind of ask me anything, whether it's about productized services or process kit or anything like that. I'll spend however long I'll hang out. So I've started receiving some questions from people, and I'm planning that. And productize is going to be kind of interesting. Like, I've already queued up the launch. This time the coaching package is a little bit different. There's only going to be like 10 spots available, and I'm doing two groups of five, just one-time calls, plus the one-on-one with me. So that'll be a little bit different. Pricing is a little bit different on that this time. And there will be a process kit extended trial now bundled in with productize, which I'm going to experiment with. And
I was going to ask how those two are eventually going to meet in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, eventually I'm going to actually work process kit into the lessons on creating processes. There's a whole bunch of lessons on that. So
yeah, I'm convinced that the ideal is getting the prospect to buy into your strategy, and then the product that goes along with the strategy. Like, if you're bought into the argument we're making for why we're building the product to begin with, you have a much better chance of the full buy-in and the shift in behavior and everything that needs to happen for a long-lasting customer.
There is definitely a clear line that goes from the productized services in general to using Process Kit. Like, that's pretty clear to me. But I don't want to go so far as to say, like, this is a tool only for productized services. Because there are a lot of businesses, whether they're agencies or even SaaS companies or other, you know, product companies or whatever, that have all these repeatable projects and repeatable processes. But my audience and as you know, there's a lot of productized service people in there for sure.
Right. And I wouldn't shy away from using your credibility as the productized authority and using that authority to lend credibility into the software product itself.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, the other thing is that it is intended for teams that are growing. You know, if you're smaller, just a freelancer, you could start using it, but it's really for those teams that are feeling the pain of process and not being able to scale the team and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm interested to kind of keep an ear out for my team as that starts to happen, because we're starting to fill in these teams. So like the success team is going from one person to two. The marketing team is going from one person to two. So all these things that we use Notion for a lot of it, but Notion's great for information. It's not actually great for process.
Right. I've been really keeping an ear to things like that. People do talk a lot about Notion, and I've heard a lot of people talk about or ask questions on Twitter about like, what do you use for a wiki for your, like an internal wiki?
Notion is taking over that world entirely.
Yeah. But like, that's an interesting, like just these like terminologies of how people describe that pain. They start to talk about wikis or they talk about process or they talk about, you know, repeatable projects.
SOPs.
Yep. You know, so I'm just trying to keep an ear to that and like see where process kit really aligns in terms of the positioning and how I want to talk about it and that kind of stuff. So,
all right, man, it's great to catch up to our dear audience members. We're sorry for the delay. There may be more delays over the summer. Brian's going away. I'm going to Slovenia. We will do our best.
That's right. Good to get one in today.
Have a great weekend. Cheers. Thanks, everybody.
Later.